Welcome to the Comic Cast, Ireland's number one comic book podcast. I'm Craig.
I'm Liam.
And we're here with an extra special summer solstice episode. The longest day of the year is nearly at our door. How are you? It's a lovely day outside. Not that we know, because the Comic Cast headquarters is a dank basement where no natural light can get in to keep our comics in the pristine condition that they need to be in to keep the resale value up.
But I could add... I could add some maybe like tripping sound effects. So now you can hear that we're actually in this basement. Yeah. And what we said earlier was completely true.
Yeah. It's an awful thing. What, are you enjoying the summer so far? All 4 days.
It's been raining all again. But I kind of, once the rain came back, I was really happy. Yeah. Just because... Because when it's sunny, I don't know about you, but when it's sunny, like, I don't go out. I stay in on Facebook and, like, kind of look out and go, oh, I should probably go for a walk in the fields or whatever. But when it's raining, I'm like...
No need to go out. I don't like the sun. I get too warm and then I can't do it. And there's nothing that the sun allows me to do that I can't do when it's slightly colder and I'm more comfortable. So I don't really enjoy the sun at all. I prefer to rain because I have to go to work and stuff. So I have to walk in the rain. And you just record your radio shows in the comfort of your bedroom, from what I understand.
That's pretty much it.
Are you excited about the Euros? Ireland are in the Euros. We might win the Euros.
Yeah, I was trying to see if, like, how we can... This is what I was thinking the other day as I walked home and seen like Irish flags like everywhere, and like the country really gets together for the football behind the country. But like, why can't we get behind, why can't the whole country get behind like other sports
like
or other
Alice
things?
Alice in Wonderland.
Or, Alice in Wonderland or Ireland's number one comic book podcast. You know?
That'd be great.
And everyone should have had their flags out when we won our award last year.
But there wasn't anyone. Well, there was Tommy Kelly and a few other people clear cheering us, but that was it.
There was. I posted this to Twitter. You may have seen it, but for anyone who hasn't, this is too good not to repeat, is that The Muppets is out on DVD.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
And as a stroke of marketing genius, going along with the DVD stands is a little kind of badge that has Kermit's face, and face painted on his face are the Irish, the tricolour across his face with the slogan, Kerm on Ireland. And I was like, this is brilliant.
I wonder if it's the same badge as being used all across Europe.
That's what I was thinking. And then I was like really annoyed.
Because when I saw it, I saw it in Tesco's just before you put it on Twitter. So I'm OG fucking Kermit badges. You know, I didn't have to read it on your Twitter feed. I also saw it in the badge. But like, Kerm on you boys in green would have been better if it had been a more... You know, Irish thing, because that's what everyone's saying. Yeah, you know, but Kerman Ireland is a very generic thing.
That's the deceptive thing, because I seen it and went, oh, that's so brilliant. It's like it's exactly attuned to Ireland, specific to the country. Because I just seen the word Ireland and I seen the tricolour. But like you said, that slogan can easily be changed to any country.
Kermit in Germany.
Yeah, it's weird. And the weird thing is also if you're listening. In the UK, the Muppets is now out on DVD, but it actually was released a couple of days ahead over here, which I thought was really bizarre.
I don't know. Weird. Anyway, just two quick things about the Euros. On the way here today, I saw a woman wearing a T-shirt said, we're all part of Trapp's army, Trapattoni. Yes. I think we just need to get away from describing our football team as an army. I think it's just hideous. And it's like, if you're in like Norway or something, you've heard of the IRA and you hear about this Irish army coming over, you know. Like,
they're going to be disappointed. Exactly. I mean, they're going to slaughter us, but they're going to be disappointed.
Absolutely. And secondly, like on the IRA thing, anytime I see anyone that just has like a flag hanging out their window, I just assume they're terrorists.
Yes.
You know?
Like, that's really weird. I've never even kind of consciously thought of that before, but it's a lot of the time when I do see like someone with a tattoo of the Ireland flag, I immediately think IRA.
So I was thinking, like, maybe if there's any IRA members listening, they could like maybe just bring it up the chain of command and just like put a swastika on the Irish flag or something, you know, just to separate your support of the Irish Republican Army from our support
of our
Ireland.
Culture and heritage. Yeah.
Anyway. But enough about this. Let's get on to the comics. What are we doing today?
We've got loads, an array of comics today.
We've got a lot of Irish comics this
week. And I think we've both had a look at them both, so we can So we got that. So,
and, well, we'll also talk about the movie.
Sorry, the rundown of the show. Yeah, we will also talk about the movie Prometheus.
Yeah, out only after coming out in America. It's been weird. I didn't want to tweet too much spoilers because I have a lot of American followers. Yes, and like a load of them, and I didn't want to spoil the movie for them. But now it's out everywhere. I think we can spoil it. Well, no, we will not be spoiling the movie. But I feel like we can give our opinions.
Yeah, I feel like we can talk freely about it.
Talk freely about it? The only thing we're getting this. I just feel like if you haven't seen it, like the movie is best seen unspoiled.
Absolutely. But I have this new thing where I'm like, well, like if you haven't seen it by now, screw you. I mean, you're obviously not a true fan.
Well, we'll give plenty of warning anyway.
Before we get in. Absolutely.
Okay, so let's just jump straight into the comic reviews.
You start with something
Irish.
We'll
do Irish first. Okay. You go on.
All right, well, let's start.
This is an organized show. We decide ahead of time what we'd review in what order.
This is the new Alan Nolan comic book in the A Murder Can Be Fatal mystery series that is published by O'Brien, written and illustrated by Alan Nolan. And this is the new one. This is Destination Homicide.
Me about it, Liam.
Yeah, I'm notoriously bad about summing up things, so I'm just going to read this little blurb and then I'll tell you what I think. So it's, when Hood City superheroes start to turn up dead, the city's worst homicide detectives, Ricky Nixon and Eddie Ribbs, are chosen to head up the case. Along with investigate reporter. Does that make sense? I'm reading off a PR sheet here.
Investigative.
Yeah, I would have thought investigative. So there's a note for...
Is that O'Brien...
reporter. Yeah, it should be investigate.
We'll send O'Brien an email.
Abigail Fletcher and their informant, blind blues man, tone deaf Roosevelt, Nixon and Ribs, must battle giant albino sewer alligators, mind controlled zombie cheerleaders, and the mysterious underground kingpin, Mr. Fogg, in a brain curdling mission to find out who's killing all the superheroes.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah, it is. This is great.
Great, let's move on. Thanks for your review.
Our one word review. It's really good. And the one thing, if you remember back at the, what was it called? What was that conference we did in the Irish Writers' Centre?
Yeah, I don't remember what it was called.
I can't remember what it was called anyway. But the O'Brien Press did a panel where they kind of showed all this thing. And Alan Nolan kind of talked a lot about the pop culture references that he had, and he had just like loads. Every comic he described, he had pop culture references in. But in this comic in particular, you really see them kind of pop out, and you kind of see things like, in fact, I've just opened up on a page where there's kind of a lineup of the tattooed crew, kind of like drawn in the usual suspects style poster. You can really see Gabriel Byrne's kind of shifty guy there. Sure. There's loads of pop culture references, which I think is really good. I think when he was talking about it on the panel, I remember thinking like it sounds like there's a lot of pop culture references. Yeah. Like you're saying, it's kind of, he'd be saying this happens, and it's kind of like what happens in Back to the Future. And I remember, I think someone asked like at the panel, it sounds like all these ideas are just from, I think in Destination Homicide, you really kind of see how he's just influenced by these things. There's a lot of kind of spoof bits in it.
Yeah.
But then the story, great, is very original. I particularly love the front page where you have like all these massive, just loads of superhero little profiles, and like, you know, some of them don't appear again, which I love.
That's great. I like that the main character is Ricky Nixon. That's like the most amusing thing ever. That's like the funniest fucking thing.
It's really good, and it's kind of it's similar to his other book, The Big Break Detective's Casebook, in that it's a comic, but then occasionally there's like news clippings, and there's kind of like, you know, like a desk that will have, you know, different little kind of things on it, you know, bad clippings and report and all sorts of menus and whatever. And this is the kind of comic that kids book that I loved as a kid. I loved those. Actually, I really loved when, there's all these clippings. Kind of reminds me of the Lemony Snicket book. What was that one? The one that came out after
the kind of
what was that called?
The biography, unauthorized biography.
Yeah, Lemony Snicket. It was just basically a whole book made up of like menus and clippings and whatever.
Absolutely.
But yes, And the art, as we, like, at the risk of repeating ourselves, yeah. Like, he's got a really distinctive style. It's really great. I really like the kind of, actually, I don't want to spoil, I'm just kind of flicking through here and I'm thinking, yeah, I don't want to spoil a lot of the characters that crop up near the end, but the villain, the main villain, is he's got a look, he's awesome. He's great. So pick this up. I mean, what more can I say?
Available in all good bookshops.
Yeah, absolutely. Destination Homicide. It is out now from O'Brien Press.
Awesome.
Yeah, check it out. Alan Nolan.
Okay.
Yeah. What you got?
Next, I think we should do Black Scorpion, League of Volunteers one shot.
Yes.
Written by our Rob Curley, and the artist by Stephen Downey, who does Jennifer Wilde as well.
Yes.
Rob Curley.
And who we had on the show, I think.
Yeah. He's a good guy. So the basic idea of this, it's a one shot about this particular member of the League of Volunteers, the Black Scorpion, and it's basically during the war, and all these four soldiers sitting around, and they're just telling of their different experiences with the Black Scorpion, who's this hero who wears like a gas mask and fights in wars and helps guys out. So it's just sort of like this, I guess, like a classic pulp story. You've kind of, I'm sure this isn't the first time you've seen a story where soldiers are talking about their experiences with different characters, but it cuts to different time periods stuff. It plays it totally straight, which League of Volunteers does in general, but in this one in particular, like, it takes, you know, it's a superhero comic, but it's deadly serious, which I like. It's got some pretty horrific sort of scenes of war, a particular scene where gas is being used on soldiers, which is something that was on Radiolab only recently, about the guy who invented the gas they used in World War One, and it's an incredible listen. Yeah, check that out. Yeah, do. So that was just in the back, it was in the front of my mind when I was reading. I was like, oh, excuse me, oh shit, that looks, you know, looks pretty intense. But at the same time, you know, it's a superhero comic, it's got a little twist at the end. And Stephen Downey's art, of course, is amazing. It's good to, it's cool to see him working in the League of Volunteers world. Obviously, Barry Keoghan, who does it normally, is awesome as well. But it's just cool to have a different take on some of those characters. I just really liked it. Atomic Diner are putting out some seriously good stuff.
I agree with you completely, especially like when I got to the end and kind of just was seeing the kind of, then I start remembering about Jennifer Wilde and everything, and like he really is creating, Rob Curley is really kind of like creating a brilliant kind of Irish like publisher who's doing like it's a great idea for comics. Absolutely. These kind of like Irish theme ones, and they really work well, because I think we see a lot of I think if you go to the kind of Irish section in Forbidden Planet or whatever, there's a few kind of like Irish superhero ones that I also feel don't really work out, or you can't really invest in them, I feel. Atomic Diner is doing a great job.
Absolutely, no, yes. So check out. Also, I think Jennifer Wilde 2 is out now, which we haven't reviewed. You should pick it up. Holy Numbers.
Holy moly.
Holy moly numbers. which is a new webcomic by Mr. Tommy Kelly.
The prolific.
Guy just doesn't stop. You know, he just keeps hammering away at comics. There's no one better in Ireland, I think, for just just keeping at the Irish comic scene and keeping putting out stuff. Most people are just lazy, and once every 2 years they'll bring out a comic. Not Tommy Kelly.
Same goes for Ireland's number one podcasters.
That is true. It's just an Irish thing, I guess. Being lazy. The basic story of this is there's this dude whose name I may have written down, I can't remember.
Ravensdale.
Who attains a sort of higher spiritual awareness through the use of the holy numbers. This isn't really, you know, it's not clear exactly how that works.
I think unless you're further along than me, we're still not sure whether, like, he does have any...
Oh, absolutely.
You know what I mean? At the minute, we're kind of at the stage where he could be have this figure who has all his higher knowledge and blah, 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 or he could just be a fake.
Absolutely.
Phony.
So he...
A psychic Sally.
He performs a miracle where he walks on water on the Liffey, I believe.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, but people aren't sure if that's if that's real or if that's fake, but it's convincing enough that... he has a sort of a cult of people that sort of join him, I guess, and he is writing books telling people how they can attain this enlightenment, and he's got all these ideals, and then he's murdered. Pretty
spoilers.
And this is in the first five panels.
This is kind of in the first in the prologue.
Yeah, so. Sorry, I'm gonna say that's in the first 20 or so panels is okay to spoil, as it's the setup. So he's murdered, but there are other people in part of his holy numbers cult who maybe don't have the ideals, hold his ideals true to heart. They're looking at ways to profit. profit, for example, allowing people to pay extra money to sort of receive this enlightenment quicker and this kind of stuff. So that's the background, I guess, of the story. And then it's... Well, I mean, it's an ongoing webcomic every day. I guess there's a new comic every
Monday, days. Isn't it?
Oh, is it every Monday?
Oh, I
don't know. There's like 24 panels pages out now.
Which, more award-winning research from your friends.
Just go
the
to holynumbers.com and check it out. But I guess the main thrust of the story going forward is the murder of this guy Ravensdale, and how was he murdered? Was he murdered? Did he have these powers? And so I think it's a really interesting idea, a really interesting comic. It feels like it has something to say. I like this idea of a modern day prophet of some kind, and how we would react to that in our times, as opposed to 2,000 years ago, how when people reacted to Jesus, if he existed. He did not.
Spoilers.
I just thought it was really good. Tommy's art in this is incredible. I think he's really. Really improved over the
years. He's really come along from Road Crew. You can see clear development, which is great.
I saw on Twitter, I think he's drawn this by hand rather than digitally, so I don't know if that has something to do with it. But just loving his art. So yeah, I mean, it's free, it's a webcomic, holynumbers.com, check it out. And one thing I liked, Tommy Kelly is fucking on the fucking pulse of this as well. I saw on Twitter the other day, he's like, oh, if you don't want to go to the website, here's a zip file of all the comics so far. Like, he understands this idea that there is so much vying for our attention these days that you just have to, you have to hammer people to check out your stuff, but B, there can't be any barrier of entry. It's like, if you're bringing out a comic and you're charging people to access it these days and you're a nobody, what are you doing? I'm not going to, if I don't know who you are, there's too many people who I know and like that are giving me free stuff that I'm not going to pay to check out your stuff.
Same
on, Bandcamp and stuff, and you see people charging for EPs and stuff, and you're like, I think... You need to grow your audience and then start charging. It doesn't work the other way around.
You grow your audience, you grow a group of people who like yourself and are willing then to pay for it. This is slightly different, but on Facebook, when people read articles from The Guardian and blah, 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 and they pop up on your feed and it seems like an interesting article and you go to click on it and it's like you have to...
Allow them access your profile.
And do your app. I just forget about it. I don't want to know. Yeah. Those people are
absolutely, the exact same. So speaking of growing your audience and stuff, the Comicast is proud to announce its subscription service going forward. It will be €10 per episode, but you'll get special insider access with me and Liam. You'll get to see what did I have for breakfast, and we'll even have a special 5-minute Skype chat just with you about anything you want for just €10 a month. It's on Kickstarter right now.
You get a password to a webcam version of the show. You can watch it live. Actually, sorry to digress for a minute, but I was listening to News Talk the other day.
That's a bit of a digression already.
Moncrief specifically, just online. I just had it on the background, but when I went on and I seen you can click watch live, and so I just clicked it, and radio, watching radio is really takes away from, it's the most boring TV you could ever watch. It's just really cuts to the ad break and Moncrief is just sitting there scratching his chin. Yeah. And it's really bizarre.
I don't know why you'd have that, and I don't know why you'd want to, one of the best things about radio and podcasts and stuff is that you can do other stuff with your eyes while you're listening to them, and your hands and eyes are free to sort of enjoy other media. So why would you just want to stare at Sean Moncrief?
It also seems a big waste of time in surely there's not enough people out there.
But I see it everywhere on Kermode Mayo's thing. They have, they're always oh, you can watch us live. All right. No. You're two old men sitting in a fucking room. I don't know why people do that, but anyway, that is a digression. Two Lives, this is our last Irish comic for today, written by John Connor and Una Gallagher, and the art is by Una Gallagher. This is a story, it's very slight, so I don't want to give too much away, but the protagonist is out for revenge on this character, the Faceless Man, who is a man who doesn't have a face, and he is really, really creepy looking. So there's positives and negatives here. There isn't much story or character development. I've pretty much given you all the story. The protagonist, I don't know if he has a name. He's out for revenge for a particular reason I won't spoil. And at the end, he has to choose whether to take his revenge or maybe to to not take his revenge, which would be a better life. So I think I've seen that story, you know, before plenty of times, which is fine. I don't have a problem with sort of the same story being told again and again, but I don't feel like this has any. Exactly. Yeah, it's very slight. Unless the idea, I guess, was to be so slight as to be a commentary on this particular format of story, but in that, I don't think it works that way either. I didn't feel like the story was up to much. The art, however, I'm generally positive on this comic, I should say, because the art by Una Galler is incredible, really good. The faceless man is really creepy. I know we say this all the time about Irish comics. It's got this kind of mangish style, but not really mangish, which is sort of the house style for Ireland.
Yeah,
but
it's really bizarre.
but done particularly well in this comic. And it, like the comic's just so short. It's two comics that are, I guess, maybe I didn't count, but maybe 20 pages total between the two of them. So overall, when I finished it, I liked it, but I wasn't. Really, I think it was just the art that I liked. The story didn't do much for me. I would be interested in seeing more comics from Una Galler in terms of art. It was incredible. Maybe just a longer story that has like literally this has no character development. Any character development would be lovely. So, but that said, I would just on the art alone definitely worth checking out. So, okay. Two lives. Check it out. I should also say, I just feel like I should mention this, IrishComicNews.com. There is a review which has the complete opposite opinion to what I just gave you. I guess that the story was fantastic. So other opinions are available, but I just want to say for me personally, no, I didn't really get much out of it. I should just clarify this whole thing. I'm just getting myself deeper into it.
You're digging a hole there.
I almost never read reviews of comics that I'm going to review on the show, but when I finished that, I was kind of confused by how I felt about it. I needed someone else to tell me how I felt, and so I went on to Irish Comics News, and I was like, "No, that isn't how I feel." But that's not a mark against the reviewer. Opinions are opinions, and they're allowed to differ. But anyway. So now that we've clarified that whole mess.
Moving on.
Before Watchmen, The Minutemen, right, okay. Issue 1.
Stop the clocks.
Yeah. That's clever. Yeah. Right? Watchmen clocks. He's got it. Yeah, you haven't read this, obviously.
No.
No, yeah, okay, that's fine. So I'll just riff on this for a few minutes. So this surprised me. I've been so not following this that I didn't even understand what Before Watchmen really was. I thought it was one issue each by a different creator of the different characters, so one Rorschach one shot, comedian one shot, etc. That is not the case. It is like mini series. So there's the one I reviewed today, Before Watchmen, Minutemen. That's a 6-issue mini series. There's a Rorschach mini series of 6 issues. So at the end of Before Watchmen, there will be like 40 new issues of Watchmen when there was only 12 originally. So I don't, you know, so it'd be weird that there's going to be significantly more of this content created after than the original. Alan Moore obviously is against the whole thing. I definitely wasn't excited about it. But I don't have a problem with. I know Alan Moore's obviously he has a real personal problem. But a lot of people just seem to be like, oh no, you know, bringing out prequels that'll sully the original. I've said this many before. I don't think additional material ever sullies the original in any way. Mm. It can only add to the discussion. I feel the same way about movie adaptations of books. Anyway, this is written and drawn by Darwin Cook. Who is probably best known for The New Frontier, which is this DC book about the Golden Age and the Silver Age sort of colliding, so like Superman and Batman meeting Green Lantern and stuff for the first time. So he's got this, what I really like about Darwin Cook, even though I didn't like The New Frontier, is that he's got this style that looks like a Golden Age comic. He's got, everyone's real happy and bright, and he's just got a really cool style. So the idea of The Minutemen, which the story is about, are the original crime fighters, so not the characters from Watchmen like Rorschach and stuff. It's the team before them, the Minutemen, which is like the Hood of Justice and the original Night Owl and the original Silk Spectre. Some of those characters are in Watchmen.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, all of them are in Watchmen, but some of them have roles in the Watchmen comic. So the Minutemen obviously is sort of formed, I think, in 1939. So that's perfect Golden Age time. So Darwin Cook, this is the right guy to draw a comic about 1939 characters. The premise, I guess, is that the original Night Owl, Hollis, is writing his book Under the Hood, which is mentioned in Watchmen quite a bit. So this is like him just writing a story of these original characters. So basically he just in this first issue, he just introduces every single one of them. Hooded Justice, who is my favorite characters from Watchmen. He is the first masked vigilante. He wears a hood. He's got a red cape. He likes murdering people. He doesn't really have any tolerance for crime whatsoever. There's a really good sequence in this where there's some cops outside and there's some criminals inside, and they see Hooded Justice, and it just cuts to the cops outside, and they're just here, like, it, you know, describes like the most horrific sounds, you know, of screams and stuff. He's just like torturing these guys inside, like, all right, this is how I want my superheroes. Sally Jupiter, the original Silk Spectre, she's faking crimes and solving them when cameras are around to try and increase her press. So at this, you know, you kind of realize that I the whole part of point of Watchmen is that, you know, these, what if real people were superheroes? And of course, it wouldn't all be good. So it goes through all these characters like Mopman, who is an alcoholic, Dollar Bill doing ads for banks, etc. Captain Metropolis, who sort of wants to profit by forming a superhero team. Yeah, so my opinion on this is sort of, it's okay. I had to read it a couple of times. I read it the first time, I didn't think much of it. But also I didn't remember a lot of these characters. So I read it a second time. I love Watchmen. I've read it many times. But just it's been so long that, and these characters, some of them are only referenced in a couple of panels.
Yeah.
Didn't really remember. So I read through it again with the Watchmen Wikipedia on my laptop. And that made it a lot more interesting to read. Although it kind of spoiled where the series is going to go, because I had this, you know, detailed breakdown of what happens to these characters, which I'd forgotten. I was like, you know, all right, so he's going to do this, he's going to do that. I can't think of a good example now, but I do love stories where, prequels where you already know how it ends, and it ends badly. For like X-Men First Class, for example, where, you know, Xavier's not going to be able to walk at the end of this movie. You know, going in, you know, that's going to happen. And, you know, Magneto and Xavier, they're not going to be friends forever. That kind of stuff. So I don't know, maybe that's why I like spoiling stuff, but I kind of like to know how stuff ends before I get in. And then the tension as we get closer to that point. And so, presumably, that's what this comic is doing. This is only the first issue, so I can't really tell. I think before Watchmen, people are feeling hit or miss on it. Even going in, like saying, no, they shouldn't do this, they should do this. And so what I think this book, this is the first Before Watchmen book, and what I needed was like a bang to say, Before Watchmen is here and it's great and you should read it. And it doesn't have that. It doesn't have, and I when I say bang, it doesn't have to be like a fucking explosion or something.
Yeah.
It can be something subtle, but just like a revelation about a character that we didn't know before, or something. And it doesn't have any of that. So it didn't grab me that way. But also, like then I'm thinking, like, well, Watchmen doesn't have, like, you know, like the point of Watchmen is that, I know it does actually have quite a literal big bang at the end, but that, you know, that it doesn't have a big bang, you know, that it's more subtle and it builds up. So that's what they're trying to do here. But I do think, like, when there's so much criticism about this, you needed something to grab people, and this sort of misses. It's really dense, like the original Watchmen. I think it's borderline impenetrable for people who haven't read Watchmen. I found it tough to read the first time without a Wikipedia, and I'm pretty familiar with Watchmen. Like I said, the art in particular is really good, and the colouring is incredible. Basically, the comic is 2-page fucking background stories on each of these characters, and each one is coloured completely different. Hooded Justice's part, which is the best part in the comic, with his red cape, the red, man, you should see the red of his cape. It is unreal. So I kind of left sort of meh on the whole Before Watchmen thing, which isn't what I would have liked to hate it or loved it, but I didn't really do either. It exists.
And that's the worst
kind. Exactly, yeah. I don't know if I'll even continue reading this series. I'll definitely read like the Rorschach ones and the Comedian ones and stuff like that. But yeah, I'll definitely keep reading them. But yeah. I'll give it stars out of 5.
You're giving it the Wario rating.
All right. That's Before Watchmen. That's all the comics I've read this
month. Okay.
Well, I've read some more, but I don't really want to talk about them.
Great. This is neither the time nor the place to talk about comics.
Yeah, so do you want to move straight into Prometheus, the movie review?
Yes, let's. Okay, let me right.
Go. Stop the presses!
I've always wanted to say that. Okay, so here's the scenario. I was just in the middle of editing the comic cast, about to post it, when the postman arrived with a copy of Where's Larry, the new book from Philip Barrett, published by O'Brien Press. So I am just going to squeeze in a quick review of this. And of course, Craig is long gone from our studios. So this is Where's Larry? It's effectively a kind of Where's Wally type book. One of those kind of, you know, you open it up and there's like a full massive page spread where you're looking for Larry the Leprechaun. And the kind of twist on it in this one, of course, is that it's in Ireland. And you kind of have to look through all these famous places like the Cliffs of Moher, Croke Park, the Rock of Cashel, where else? Trinity College, loads of famous places. And you have to try and find Larry. And not only do you have to try and find Larry, but there are plenty of other things or friends that you can try and find in each two-page spread, including the Twins, who are kind of like this Jedward group, and like loads of different things. An Irish dancer, you have to find a banshee, you know, on each page, a man with a Zimmer frame, and possibly my favourite is a politician who in every scenario is going around trying to win the vote, and he's putting up his posters, you know, like on the side of the Cliffs of Moher. And and he's meeting with all sorts of aggro from the public as he goes along. So this is, I mean, that's pretty much it. That's pretty much what this comic is, or book is. It's by Philip Barrett. And so, disclaimer, I have written a comic with Philip Barrett. I have worked with Philip Barrett. But that aside, it's a really fun book. If you enjoy Where's Wally or the Where's Wally app, if you enjoy that, you will like this, and kids will love this. So it's really fun anyway, but on top of that, you have Philip Barrett. So Philip's art is really great. He's got a really fine-tuned style. It's really his own. Sometimes you have people's styles who kind of remind you of someone else, or they look a little bit like someone else, but I really feel that Phillips stands out on its own. And I'm going to tell you why this book is perfectly suited, this type of book is perfectly suited to Phillips' work, is that it kind of, he has the space to do these kind of huge two-page colour spreads in glorious full colour, and we don't get to see Phil's work in colour too often, because, you know, usually there's like small press comic books and black and white. So it's great to see in full, glorious Technicolor. But why this type of book lends itself to Philip is that he has the great opportunity to kind of really do all these really humorous kind of bits. So, for example, just on every page, there's so much going on, and there's so much that is wickedly hilarious on every page. Like, just off the top of my head, there's like on one page, inexplicably, there's a guy dressed up as a carrot being chased by a whole lot of rabbits. At the Giant's Causeway bit, there's life-size kind of chess pieces and an actual king and queen having a fight on the Giant's Causeway as if it was a chessboard. We have like at Crowpatrick, we have, you know, like there's everyone walking up to try and get to the top of the mountain, but there's like this guy at the bottom is going the wrong way and someone's, you know, pointing at him. One of my favorite bits actually at Crowpatrick is there's a guy at the bottom of the mountain. He's got his easel out and he's painting the scene in front of him, except he's not. He's painting a cityscape despite everything that's in front of him. I could go on. I don't really want to like tell all these little bits that are going on, because it's so much fun to kind of find them yourself. And by the way, finding Larry is incredibly frustrating. He's planted all these kind of decoys on every page, so you've got, you know, people who kind of vaguely look like Larry the Leprechaun but are not Larry the Leprechaun. Yeah, it's just you know, it's that kind of, you know, find the person type book. It's with Phil Bart's wonderful artwork and amazing sense of humor, and in really, really generous 2-page spreads. I mean, really, this must have taken ages. Maybe we'll get Phil on to talk about it, but this must have taken him ages to do. So highly recommended. It is out on the 14th of June. It's published by the O'Brien Press. So you can find more details on o'brien.ie, or check out Phil's website, which is blackshapes.com, and you can get all of Phil's small press comic books up there as well. So yes, Where's Larry by Philip Bard. Go out there and get it now. And we will now resume normal programming. Back to me and Craig.
Comics.
Yes. So do you want to move straight into Prometheus, the movie review?
Yes, let's.
Okay, let me get notes here.
Okay. Right, just everyone cool down.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, not any hotheads.
Yeah.
So,
I do want to give a little. Everyone knows what Prometheus is, but I guess if you know.
Yeah. That. Okay. So, well, Prometheus is the prequel of sorts to the Alien franchise.
Yeah.
But not a direct story prequel, as so many people seem to think it is.
Yeah.
And which is really. Frustrating for me to hear people reviewing it and going, oh, there was nothing of the original, or there was no characters. Sure. Like, they never said that. Like, from the outset, yeah. They said, you know, it's set in the same universe.
Yeah. Like, there's one piece of marketing information that's been, like, hammered home of this thing. Yes. It's like, it's not a direct prequel. That's all I've heard for, like, two years straight.
I mean... Whew. Well, we both went to see this at midnight.
Are you a big fan of the original Alien? Or
I am. I am a big fan, and actually, I'm a big fan, but I hadn't really seen them in a couple of years. Leading up to it, I rewatched Alien and Aliens.
Oh yeah,
just to get in the.
Yeah, sure. I didn't. I'm going to rewatch them soon.
The humor, yeah.
Because I didn't even I consider myself a fan of them, but it's been so long since I've seen them. I didn't even remember the space jockey from the original. Like, I didn't remember.
That is one thing that actually struck me, is that particularly when I seen the original film, like, that was one thing that never kind of jumped out at me and going, oh, the space jockey and blah blah. And I'm wondering that all these people who are saying, oh yeah, it's about the space jockey, and like all this wondered, well, like, who he was and that. And I think I'm wondering whether all these reviewers and people who have this opinion are jumping on the bandwagon kind of like wondering about this guy, because, like you said, I mean, he pretty much passed me by. I didn't give him much of a second thought.
And I feel like if there was like a clamoring out for a space jockey story, that it would have been covered in like Aliens, Alien 3, Alien Resurrection. Alien vs. Predator, Alien vs. Predator 2. Like, it's never mentioned again, you know? So I don't think there was like this clamoring. So in that case, sense, I think it's a cool idea to, and it's definitely something you can expand on. I had some point to say, but I forgot. Yeah, Prometheus. It is about, I guess, these people who have find some writing in the stars.
Archaeologists.
Yeah, they find some writing in some caves, and that leads them to a planet, and, you know, far away from Earth, light years away.
They believe that, like, some aliens, where they believe is the home of some aliens who created life,
human life. Yeah, human, absolutely. Life. And that's definitely the main theme of the movie is, and I guess one of the main problems, I should say, I really like the movie, but one of the main problems is, I guess, that people talk in a way, the dialogue isn't great. People talk in a way I don't think people talk to, where it's always like, oh, we're going to meet our maker, and what'll happen? They talk in themes, blatantly about the theme of the movie and stuff like that, which it didn't bother me, but people seem to have a serious problem with that. And the best, I guess, the main character, my favourite character, is Fassbender, is David, who's this android.
Who's the standout, surely.
Absolutely.
And acting in this.
It's like Ridley Scott filmed a movie and then realized, like, Fassbender was the best thing in it, because he seems to sort of focus on David at the expense of everyone else in the movie. But he is the best character, and I guess the idea of he's already met his maker, and he's not too impressed.
Yeah,
you know, so that's a theme going forward. Yeah, I don't know. I don't want to say too much of a spoil the story. I thought this is like an incredible movie. I thought visually, I don't think anyone will argue.
Yeah, I don't
that.
Think anyone's faulting the visuals. And presumably, if you've seen it at midnight, you've seen it in 3D.
I did, yeah.
And I thought the 3D was really good.
This is the first time. I'm a known 3D hater. But this, more than Avatar, I've felt like, oh yeah, this is really good in 3D. I will say with the caveat. And I didn't have like the sort of darkness problem that I usually have with, but mainly because the spaceship is actually quite bright and stuff.
Yeah,
like
everything. Yeah.
But after about halfway through the movie, I just forgot I was watching in 3D.
Yeah.
You know, which at that point I was like, I don't know why I spent €15 on these tickets. But yeah, so it's not an alien movie. Everyone's so angry. Like people are angry about it.
I don't understand it, because the thing about it is that like when I came out of it, I didn't actually. Like, when I came out of it, I didn't want to go home and watch Alien or Aliens. I wanted to go home and watch 2001, yeah, 2010,
absolutely,
or Silent Running.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you know what I mean? It felt more like a kind of a sci-fi movie, you know, with some kind of interesting idea,
yeah,
that science fiction is particularly good at kind of trying to tackle, yeah, kind of like big ideas, yeah, even though this one doesn't. Like, actually, one of the things is that like the big kind of question is in this particular,
yeah,
world and the story is like, you know, where did human life come from?
Yeah.
And I've seen a lot of reviewers say kind of that, you know, it asks this big question and kind of like answers it or whatever,
yeah,
but like it doesn't answer it at all. Like, well, I don't think it comes close to answering.
The opening scene explains pretty straightforwardly where life was created from on Earth. I mean, that's the opening scene. I mean, in the sense that, well, this guy came and did this thing.
Yeah.
I mean, not in great detail.
Yeah, yeah.
But
no, I wasn't satisfied with that as the kind of.
Sure, I do feel like it has these big themes and it doesn't do a lot to answer them. I also feel like it's a big setup for more sequels, you know.
Yes.
But yeah, actually, we're kind of meandering here. The monsters in this thing, the monster design, I'd spoil getting into any specifics, but there's multiple and they are creepy as fuck. And I'm well versed in horror movies and monster movies in particular, so I'm not affected by those things, but I was. Maybe it was just because it was midnight, or by the time this stuff kicked in, maybe 1 o'clock, but you know, I was like covering my mouth and looking away and shit. Like, I was like, holy shit, that looks incredible. The tension in this movie, like it just ramps up like again and again and to like an almost unbearable degree, like,
yeah,
and it just keeps going. There's no relief until the end of the movie, and even then not really that much. Remind me a lot of the movie Sunshine. Have you seen Sunshine, the movie with Chris
Danny
Evans?
Boyle.
I think
that's actually, never thought of that.
Yeah, I think if you haven't seen Prometheus yet, you should keep the movie Sunshine in the back of your mind and think, oh, a lot of these scenes look like they're taken directly from Sunshine. And Noomi Rapace, I don't know how you pronounce her name, the girl with the dragon tattoo, as I like to call her.
Yeah.
She is really good in it. I thought she's not Sigourney Weaver, but
she's not, and she has that look about Sigourney Weaver,
yeah,
or the kind of short hair of Ripley.
Absolutely.
That's actually one of the things I thought, like, having, and it's probably just after watching like Alien maybe like 2 days beforehand, but I thought there was huge similarities, whether this was on purpose or not, I think it was,
yeah,
but huge similarities between things that were happening in Prometheus that had happened in Alien in a kind of loose way. I felt like that the lead actress was very like Sigourney Weaver.
Yeah.
Then we have like the kind of we have the android.
Yeah.
Who's like
Lance,
you know,
Henderson's character.
Yes, exactly. We have. Yeah, it's difficult to talk about without spoiling stuff, but frankly, I really feel that you should have seen this movie already.
Yeah.
But this is the best way of saying it, the most famous scene in Alien, the most notorious scene in Alien,
yeah,
I think is actually hugely mirrored
in
Prometheus and done in a really neat way. I thought it was a really nice touch. It wasn't like, I felt like in subsequent in the Alien franchise,
yeah,
you know, they're occasionally kind of doing that scene again,
yeah,
whatever, but I kind of thought this was kind of reinvention of
absolutely,
that particular
definitely
scene, and a really clever one.
Yeah.
What else?
I just love this movie. Like I really wanted to watch it again. I've written on here. I would really like if there is a director's cut. I do feel like one problem that people have that I do agree with is like most of the characters kind of shortchanged at the expense of the two main characters.
Although you should mention director's cut because again, I've dipped myself in like an alien vat recently.
Oh, yeah.
And reading like about how you know people are always talking about is it the aliens director's cut or Alien. I can't remember. It's one or the other, but where Ridley Scott just said in an interview years after the director's cut is that it was pretty much a marketing thing. I pretty much think the original was perfect.
Oh, sure, yeah. Ridley Scott didn't do Aliens, so...
Oh, yeah, of course, Alien. Yeah. So it must have been Alien, sorry. Yeah. yes.
There's an alien at the door right now.
We just paused. Yes, where were we?
We were talking about Prometheus, the movie. This is directed by Ridley Scott.
Like you said, like when I came out of it, I really wanted to see it again. I wanted to continue.
Yeah.
Like it clearly, it clearly ends on like a cliffhanger, or it clearly ends that there's going to be more. And I kind of, it actually, it really felt kind of, and not in a bad way, but it really felt that when we got to the end, we were still in the middle.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just wanted it to continue.
Definitely. I want to see it again. But like, I came out and I was thinking like maybe not 5 out of 5, I did a few problems, but like 4.5 out of 5, you know, if I was giving a score to it, it's really good. And then it's like people saying like, this is the worst movie I've ever seen in my entire life. And I just look at, I know we are like Green Lantern defenders here in the Comic Cast, so we're not like paragons of fucking the internet's views on opinions. I just don't understand how people could hate it that much. I thought it was really good, unless you went in and wanted like a fucking scene for scene remake of Alien.
That's what's confusing me about this whole thing is that I'm thinking like, surely like diehard film fans, like there's surely they weren't going in expecting some sort of like really kind of alien type film.
And
that's what I can't understand, because like otherwise it's like a pretty decent, like stripped away from kind of like any other kind of alien notion or whatever, like it's a decent sci-fi film. At the very least, it's a decent sci-fi film.
And sci-fi fans are notorious for liking shit that isn't that good and telling you that it's brilliant. You know? Like, sci-fi fans are easy to please. Just put something in space.
And I wonder if this kind of, say this was released and the Aliens universe didn't exist or whatever, like I wonder would everyone, all the people who didn't like it, suddenly love it. It's so hard to fathom.
Two quick points. One, Blade Runner. I actually think there's a lot of parallels to Blade Runner in that it's about artificial intelligence, like David's character and stuff, and how human is something that's been created. But anyway, Blade Runner, that was originally released, panned by the critics. Prometheus, the next Blade Runner.
The Comic Cast posing big questions.
Two, the second point is, like, I think people should just be... I'm not... That's right.
I think people should just shut up.
They should be grateful that Ridley Scott made a new movie. And I felt this way about... what was that movie? Inception. The idea that we're getting this a huge budget movie that is tackling big themes successfully or unsuccessfully, you know, this is still 100 times better than Transformers or something, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, that at least is trying to do something new and trying to say something. And I think that should be sort of applauded that they spent however $200 million on this or whatever they spent, but made something that's quite niche, I think, in that in theme and stuff like that. So I think you should definitely watch Prometheus.
I guess the last word. What is the main actor? Can you remember the main actor's name in it?
You mean the girl?
No, or the main guy. Sorry.
Oh, I don't know his name.
Actor, but. I kid you not, for the first 20 minutes I thought Tom Hardy slipped down, was in this film. I was like, oh, awesome, Tom Hardy's in this.
yeah,
but not Tom Hardy.
He's too busy doing Batman.
We want to be fair, we want to show some balance.
You know, the Comic Guys, we love having balance.
We love being fair. On the night that we went to see it at midnight, and everyone was on Twitter afterwards, and most people didn't like it.
Yeah.
One of those people was Declan Shalvey.
Sure. What would he know about storytelling?
And we have Declan Shalvey over Skype right now to tell us his view.
Declan, just what did you think of Prometheus? You went to see it at midnight, same time as us. Got back to Twitter. All hell broke loose on Twitter.
The public went crazy when they heard what I had to say. I wanted to tweet that Prometheus more like Prometheus, but Jordy thought it was too mean, and Mooney didn't understand, so I was like, nah, I'll leave it. No, I didn't like it. When I was watching it, I liked it less when I left the cinema, and I proceeded to like it less and less since then. I really liked that it was an original sci-fi movie. Well, original, it was, you know, heavily a lot of alien stuff in there, but it was cool that it was a big sci-fi movie. You know, like I was talking to Stephen Thompson about this too. Yeah, it's definitely more of a sci-fi movie than, say, Alien, which is more of a horror movie set in space. This is actually a sci-fi movie. It's all about exploring space and finding God. And, you know, it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool to just, like, go to see a movie all about that. But I thought that I didn't find the characters engaging at all, except for maybe the captain and David. You know, they should just call that movie David. he was a Fassbender, man. Bloody hell, he's deadly, but as I was watching it, I just realized I don't really care what happens here, you know. And I thought all the alien stuff that was in it was kind of wasn't really necessary at all. It's like they're trying to do a sci-fi movie and promote it slightly as an alien movie for a box office, but that really hurt it as a film, I think, because it didn't really need any of that alien stuff in there. It felt a little bit like fan service, that's a spoiling thing, but the very last thing you see in the movie is very much a nod to Alien, which if you just take that as a movie in and of itself, just as a movie, Prometheus, you've never seen anything else, you'd wonder what the hell is going on, because why would you end it on that? And I thought it'd be way more interesting if the I don't want to spoil anything, but a way more tragic end would have seemed more fitting the way the movie was going.
Yeah.
But then they just kind of like made it a little bit happier. I'm like, and all the actors were really good, but like there's a scene with the captain and the main girl, and they're like talking, you know, they're really like, you know, emoting with each other. And I was thinking like, where the hell did this relationship come from? Like, they've never even talked before in the movie. And I'm not really, really strict to this stuff. Like, I generally am just genuinely pleased to see a sci-fi movie or a cool new or original idea. And it just left me cold in general. But I thought it looked amazing. Like, every second of it looked spectacular. And I don't just mean the effects. I mean the sets and the lighting and everything. It was just fantastic. But
do you think if they'd removed, if it was just a big sci-fi movie and they'd removed all references to Alien, like, would you have enjoyed it better? Would you give it an extra star on your...
I think I would have enjoyed it better. I think I'll try watch it again, keeping that in mind, that you know, it's not an alien film. Then again, I'm not a huge alien fan like a lot of guys. I just quite like the alien movies. I saw them. I only saw them in the last few years, so you know, it's not like I was really hyped to see an alien movie either. So you know, I'm not like the general population who's dying to see an alien movie. I was quite open to not seeing one. It's just that I just found it distracting, really. You know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm coming from the same boat in terms of what I was saying with Craig earlier. Was that I'd seen Aliens years ago, all the movies, and I kind of watched them again recently just to kind of get geared up for this movie. But then also when I came out of it, I felt it didn't make me want to go and watch Alien or Aliens. It made me want to go and watch 2001, 2010, and Silent Running.
sorry, time. I thought you meant Cool Runnings for a second. No, absolutely. It's way more in tone. It's absolutely more one of those movies. Like it's more of a sci-fi movie than Alien is. I just don't see the reason why it had to be tied in there. And you only end up like there's the scene with the two scientists. You know, you kind of know what's going. It's cool. You know, the creature that's in there, but it's also distracting because you're like, oh, I know what this is. I don't know, it took me out of the movie that the Prometheus could have been in a strange way. But I mean, I still enjoyed it. Like I saw it in 3D, and do you know the way the text comes up at the beginning?
Oh yes, yeah.
There was this weird shadow behind the text, and it like was totally screwing up my my brain. And then you see the engineer at the beginning, and I wasn't sure if the 3D was still messing with my brain, and he's supposed to look normal, you know, like you know, they're very, they're the human-esque, you know. But I thought, is this 3D messing with me or what? But and I'm still very confused as to what that scene was about. And
me too.
The scene where she has to get rid of the alien. As well, I knew what was coming. I'm like, I don't really need to see this. I don't know.
Right.
like it's a nice idea, but I don't actually need to see. Well, if you've spoiled things already,
we have.
Like,
we have.
Okay, you don't really need to see them ripping her open to get rid of the. It just seemed, I don't know. I think it was like 70% a movie I would love, but then 30% was quite weird. And Charlize Theron was great, and Stringer Bell, Idris Elba, he was great. There was lots of like really cool bits in there, but as well the end, like you were there, like the captain's going to sacrifice himself, and the other two guys are like, yeah, totally. Who the hell are these guys? Jordy made a good point as well that in the original Alien movie there was only a crew of like 8. Where in this one there's a crew of 17, and you didn't really know any of them.
Yeah, that is a really good point. I don't think I mentioned this with Craig, is that a lot of the crew seemed unlikable. They didn't unlikable.
But I didn't like them.
But you weren't. Yeah, you didn't want to go to the pub and have a drink with them.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you think the planned or the proposed sequels to this movie will kind of maybe fix any of the problems? Do you think it will help continuing the story?
Well, if they continue the story, I imagine it would leave that whole alien thing behind, which would probably make it more interesting. But I really. It annoys me when I watch a movie and I'm told you've got to watch the next movie. I'm totally fine if you're watching a series, if you're watching like a television series, and like, oh, you know, you got to watch more than just one. That's fair enough. But the whole construction of a movie is you really should be engaged and want to know more. And it should really speak as a story in and of itself, I feel. It would annoy me if it's like, if the first movie makes sense when you watch the second movie. There's not enough. You have to wait 2 years for the next movie. I don't think there's really enough to warrant that episodic nature in such a huge way. But I would imagine the sequel might be better because it based on a generally fairly solid movie that Prometheus was, and not have any of the trappings of, you know, having to deal with Alien in any kind of way.
Yeah.
It could very well, and I definitely would see it.
Mm.
But I didn't hate the movie. I just was very disappointed, and that hasn't happened in a while.
Right.
And considering my expectations weren't huge, I only watched the teaser trailer. I didn't watch anything else because I deliberately stayed away. It's not like my expectations were huge. I guess that's the thing. Normally, my expectations are. I'm disappointed when my expectations have been raised. This one, I was like, this is going to be at least good.
Yeah.
No, and it was good, but it certainly wasn't anything more than that for me.
All right. Well, thank you very much for talking to us, Declan.
No problem.
And that was Declan Shelby. Mm,
thanks, Declan. Right, let's even know you're completely fucking wrong. What's your opinion?
Now, where are we?
News, I guess.
News.
Do you have any news?
I know. I looked around the room like I might see something that remind me.
First thing first, we're on Facebook and Twitter. You should check that out. I always forgot to say that.
Yeah, we do. Facebook.com/TheComicCast.
Yeah,
Twitter @TheComicCast.
Also, Irish Comic News is a really good website for getting Irish comic news. You should check that out.
And it's regular.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
If you're sick of us.
It's as regular as my fiber-based diet. Yeah, so check that out. I was sort of assuming you had the news.
Oh, well, I have a bit of news.
Okay, well, I'll just give you quickly what I have. Captain America 2, the movie, the director has been announced, or almost announced. It is, in fact, two people, Joe Russo and Anthony Russo, who directed...
The Russos,
yeah, but not related to that other Russo. They directed Welcome to Collinwood. Yeah, Rene Russo. They directed Welcome to Collinwood. I don't know if you've seen that with George Clooney.
Oh, yeah.
And they've done a lot of TV, like Arrested Development and stuff. Seems like a... kind of a weird choice, but yeah, you know, whatever. But yeah, absolutely. Why not? I mean, who directed the first one? The guy did The Rocketeer. I can't think of his name. So I kind of wish he'd come back, but whatever. And the other news I have is that Declan Shalvey's Dark Avengers comic is out on stores now, which is basically just Thunderbolts, but it's been renamed and is now called Dark Avengers. But I don't mean that as a negative. That's a marketing thing. So it's just a continuation, I guess, of the Thunderbolts. But you should check it out. I had a quick look through it today, and it looks pretty good.
Okay. And speaking of Irish comic book professionals, I think I mentioned this before. We definitely have, but do check out Stephen Mooney's production blog of Half Past Danger.
Yeah, it looks so good.
It's amazing. And it, basically, this is a creator-owned comic that Stephen has been working on. He took, I think he saved up some money last year so that he could spend quite a lot of last year working on it. He wrote it. He drew it. It's got Nazis. It's got dinosaurs. It looks superb. But particularly, a lot of people kind of do production blogs or try to start production blogs, and they're not that great. Maybe they're occasionally post up a sketch or whatever, but he's very detailed in his kind of, and generous with the kind of images and sketches, and also the writing side as well. So I think the first issue is done, and he's looking for a publisher, but so if you want to follow that, we'll link it up.
Absolutely.
Half Past Danger.
It looks so good.
What else? I mean, I want to mention this briefly because we seen the trailer last night, and this came out of nowhere for me. Anyway, this was Disney's Wreck-It Ralph.
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't know much about it only for the trailer I seen last night, but it seems to be Disney's new kind of computer animated movie, which is about a kind of a villain in an 8-bit arcade game who decides that he has had enough of being the villain in this kind of Donkey Kong-esque smashing game, and he kind of goes jumping through all these different genres of video games, and it looks hilarious. It looks very good. It's got Sarah Silverman and William John C. Reilly. Yes, as the two main voices. Looks great. There's an awesome bit in the trailer where he's in some sort of villain AA meeting or something, and there's Bowser and Dr. Egg from Sonic and one of the ghosts from Pac-Man. It looks amazing.
His name is Robotnik or
Eggman. Or Eggman. What did I say? Dr. Egg.
It sounds like, although I think you should keep that for Gazebo too, just think of an egg in sort of a James Bond chair with a mustache and a hat maybe or something. Dr. Egg, good to see you again, Gazebo, John Gazebo.
Wouldn't it be great? And instead of stroking a cat, he strokes a chicken. Amazing. Which came first? Yeah. I'm going to write that comic.
The egg.
I'm trying to think, is there anything else?
Spider-Man and Batman movies are out soon. Empire has an excellent feature on Batman this month.
Yes.
It's 20 fucking pages. It's really good. I don't have any news. Do you have any secrets to tell me?
Well, actually, just that you mentioned Empire, I seen this in Empire and it reminded me of this movie. I agree with kind of this little article in Empire that this movie needs more to be seen more. The Lion King 3.
Okay? Oh, yeah, I knew that.
I know you've seen this. It's amazing.
I think I've seen it on TV.
Yeah, it's like, it is amazing because it's basically Timon and Pumbaa who, it basically tells Timon and Pumbaa's story during the events of the first Lion King film. So you're kind of, it's actually a really great idea. I don't remember it being done before.
Sure.
But it's actually quite a good concept.
Yeah, yeah.
Where, you're kind of, it's interweaving, it's during the same time and it's interweaving the same scenes, but it's only following different characters.
Sure.
So in that respect, it's it's a lot of fun.
Sure.
Actually. And actually,
I know there's a big Lion King trilogy box set out.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think the second one's very good, but
it's definitely not.
But the third one is, and it's good fun. And actually, I'm 99% sure I'm not wrong on this, but Joss Whedon co-wrote one of the songs that is still in the Lion King 3, which makes it even more amazing.
That's incredible.
So do look that up. It's probably cheap.
Sure.
Those Disney prequels and sequels, and
they turn us
out. They are nuts.
Yeah, I know. Little Mermaid too.
There's God. Like there's the Fox and the Hound too. Yeah, when yeah. I heard about that, I was like, there's no way there can't be a Fox and the Hound too. But it's kind of a prequel. And I don't know where it fits into the story. Yeah. The most depressing story.
Turn those out, fucking yeah, yeah. Remember when they brought out the Jungle Book 2 and for some reason gave it a cinema release? John Goodman playing Baloo.
That's amazing. That's incredible. Although, famously, I think Toy Story 2 was going to be a direct-to-DVD story before, like, they kind of halfway through realized, oh, this is pretty good. Maybe we'll release it.
Sure, yeah.
Otherwise, we mightn't have had, like, Toy Story 3.
That's incredible. Toy Story 2 is amazing. I saw something recently. The Comic-Cast is over, by the way. Now we're just talking.
You can get your codes.
Exactly. Someone in Pixar like deleted Toy Story 2 like from like the collective hard drives of everyone at Pixar, so really? They lost the whole movie, and only that there was like someone working at home that wasn't connected to the network, and they rang her like disconnect your computer and you know, drive very carefully back to the office.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Although not to talk about this when I haven't kind of researched it fully, but wasn't Toy Story 2 the kind of they were working on it and they were kind of almost halfway through and they just thought this is not working at all, and they kind of scrapped it kind of in the middle of it, and
that's true, yeah.
Started again,
yeah, for the best. Toy Story 2, one of the best movies ever made.
Yes.
Any other else you want to talk about just in general? Just riff with me here for a minute, bro.
Just what, aside from comics?
Yeah what else?
Mm.
I don't know. Yeah. Watching Mad Men, that's a good show.
I've never watched Mad Men. There's an interesting fact for you. Hmm. I mean, yeah, but people say it's about, like, there's too many TV shows.
There is.
I mean, I understand that we're coming into some sort of renaissance, or we're in the middle of a renaissance for TV drama, and there's quite a lot of good TV drama. But frankly, I mean, they're all, like, almost close to an hour-long episodes of series that go on forever.
Sure.
I don't have the time to watch all of them.
What are you doing? Like, I have a full-time job. I squeeze them in.
I'm saying I don't watch it. Like, I watch Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
Damages is quite good.
Yeah, that's your problem.
thankfully, is continuing. That's probably it, really, sure. For TV shows. And Smash. Have you watched Smash?
I watched one episode, but then I did.
It's really good. You should continue.
Yeah, no, I shouldn't. I didn't really enjoy it that much. I don't like Catching McPhee. I don't like anyone from American Idol.
I didn't. That it did ruin me halfway the series because I didn't know she was from American Idol.
I watched that halfway through. American Idol.
It's kind of embarrassing. I was like really angry.
Yeah.
But yes. Okay.
Let's put this dying down. Yeah,
and the last thing. By the time you hear this.
I will be dead.
today that we're recording the podcast, the Tony Awards are on tonight. And
this isn't a musical hour, buddy.
And Spider-Man, this is the first Tony Awards where Spider-Man is now officially released.
Oh, yeah.
It hasn't been, like, I mean, you know, it's not in the best musical category, let me tell you.
Yeah.
But I mean, just because a lot of people... If you're not interested in musicals, you're not going to be looking at the Tony Awards. They maybe even just pass you by. But do search YouTube, and I think there's going to be a performance from the Spider-Man.
Oh, great.
There was one in last year's Tony Awards, but because at the time everything was going wrong, they decided to just do a song that didn't require any flying.
Oh, sure.
And it was just Mary Jane and Peter Parker just singing to each other. So we may get something a little more juicy. And you may get to see, you know, what Spider-Man on stage looks like.
I heard talk of it, like, touring of Leaving America.
It's interesting. Yeah, it's completely turned around. It's interesting from the point of view that when we went to see it,
we thought it might be gone, like, soon. Like,
everyone did. It was in previews. It was the biggest flop on Broadway. And not that, like, I don't think any of the kind of Broadway reviews are saying it's, like, in any way a very decent musical. But
that's high praise.
It's certainly, they certainly got rid of the awful bits, so now it's more of a kind of a spectacle that you kind of will go and see and kind of enjoy, rather than a spectacle that you will go and see and kind of go, oh, that was
sure.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. It needs to come to Ireland, or at least England. I'll definitely go to England for it.
All right, we will be back in 2 weeks. fingers crossed.
That's a bold promise.
With an interview with who, I don't know. But yeah,
it might be your dad. we should get your dad to read you some comics.
Yeah, right? Yeah, we should just get like each week we'll get like just to ask a random person to like interview a review.
Anytime anyone suggests to either me or you that someone else does some work on the Comicast, I know we always jump at the chance like yes, someone else should do it.
We'll just be executive producers.
Yeah.
But unfortunately not earn any money from this cashless cow that is the Comicast. Yeah. Alright, well, you've been listening to the Comicast.
Yeah, I'm Liam. I'm Greg. Talk to you soon.
Goodbye. Well, a man came to our house. A man came to our house to sell some brooms. So we asked him to come in and we hit him with the hammer and we hit him in the closet in my father's room. But you're always welcome at our house any time of the day. Yes, you're always welcome at our house and we hope you will stay. Then a lady came to our house, a lady came to find out why I wasn't in school. So we asked her to come in and we gave her some poison lemonade and hid her in the freezer where it's nice and cool. But you're always welcome in our house any time of the day. Yes, you're always welcome at our house and we hope you will stay. Came into our yard. A kid came into our yard to get his ball. So we asked him to come in and we took him in the basement and we sealed him up inside the basement wall. But you're always welcome in our house any time of the day. Yes, you're always welcome at our house and we hope you will stay. So when you come to our house, when you come to our house, we'll have some fun. We'll ask you to come in and we'll take you in the kitchen and we'll put you in the oven until you're done. But you're always welcome at our house any time of the day. Yes, you're always welcome at our house and we hope you will stay, and we know you will.